Welcome to Future Proof, the marketing podcast from Kantar, the world's leading marketing data and analytics company, and Side Business School, University of Oxford. In each episode, we speak with marketing leaders and share insights to help brands and business leaders navigate the ever-changing marketing landscape and hopefully dispel some myths and misconceptions along the way.
So hello.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hello, I'm Nikki Morley, Head of Behavioral Science and Innovation Expertise at Kantar. Today, I'm joined by Charlotte Langley, who is the Chief Customer Officer at Bloom & Wild. So welcome, Charlotte. I am delighted to be able to chat to you as more of a contemporary, digital-first sort of D2C company. I think our more traditional brands we often work with can learn a lot from companies like yourselves. So thank you for agreeing to chat to me today. And first up, Charlotte, tell me a little about yourself and your role at Bloom & Wild.
Thanks, Nikki. It's a pleasure to be here. Kantar is actually quite familiar to me because I started my career in FMCG at L'Oreal, so I was often delving into the Kantar dashboard. So, yeah, I kind of started with this commercial and marketing background at L'Oreal, which really gave me a good breadth to sort of set me up to take some of those principles into the D2C startup scale-up world that I now find myself in. So as you said, I'm Chief Customer Officer at Bloom & Wild. So really, I see myself as the champion of the customer and their experience. And I look after brand, creative, comms, our product range, and our customer insights as well. So it's not just about making ads at all. It's about crafting those sort of compelling brand experiences that drive business growth. And I think it's important that we've connected those teams together as well to ensure that we have that sort of seamless innovation process whereby, you know, product collections are built on insight and beautifully designed and packaged and creatively communicated. So it's a really great role, and I feel very lucky to have it.
Sounds like a brilliant role, and I love the idea that you've connected those teams together. We often see that people who work in silos, businesses that work in silos, really can struggle. So that's brilliant. Tell me about you. I've had lots of successes at Bloom & Wild. So tell me a bit about the success of Bloom & Wild.
Yeah, so I think when the company started about 10 years ago, there just were no loved brands in this space. And Google was everyone's kind of go-to flower brand, people just typing in flower delivery. And you had to make do with sending flowers that probably really weren't to your taste and regularly didn't last more than a few days. And the customer NPS for the industry was around zero. And so with Bloom & Wild, we really came in and my boss, Erin, who's our co-founder and CEO, really invented letterbox flowers in the UK and created a really, really strong product market fit. And we were growing, you know, 100% year on year pre-COVID. And obviously then in COVID, that growth sort of accelerated and meaningfully sort of shifted our baseline, as lots and lots of people wanted to be able to find a way to stay connected with people they love that they were separated from. In terms of where we are as a business now, we did our Series D funding at the end of 2020. We made two acquisitions in 2021. So we're now a group of three brands, in fact, operating across eight markets. And we are Europe's leading D2C online flower and plant company.
Well, that's brilliant. You know, really sort of being the, you know, finding that white space and really being the inventors of that letterbox flowers. Obviously, that requires a lot of innovation. Innovation is obviously important to Bloom and Wild and to your success. So what have you done differently in the innovation space that's enabled you to have such great success?
What we tend to do that marks out our success is we bring together sort of combination of real sort of human empathy and understanding and really dedicated care for our customers and their gifts and what they're doing. And we combine that with sort of best in class data, tech and operations. And so something like Letterbox Flowers, which came from the insight that actually flowers travel the world flat packed, and so, you know, we all think that they come in bouquets and they need to be treated very, very carefully, which of course they do, but actually that flat pack insight then gave us this sense that okay, we could solve a customer problem with that, which is that it was quite difficult to actually send somebody a bouquet because you had to know that they'd be in, and then you sort of spoil the surprise and all of that kind of stuff. So you can see how bringing together something that's quite operational, functional, with a sort of more emotional insight of, well, actually, I want this thing to be a surprise, or I don't want it to be a huge bouquet that's a massive deal. I just want to send something which shows somebody I'm thinking of them. That combination actually then sort of started to change the way that people gifted flowers. And so we talk a lot about just because gifting. That's quite a large part of the reason that people send. Of course, they're sending for Mother's Day and birthdays and things like that, but they're also sending to say, I know you've had a bad week and I'm thinking of you and you're going to be fine. And it's also very largely female to female gifting, what we do. So you might think of the sort of flower industry as quite romantic, for example, quite sort of, you know, heteronormative and, traditional in the, who's gifting whom. But actually, we see that it's really about strong female support networks, largely, not exclusively, but largely. And so I think that's what's really interesting about innovation that we've done, is that it can bring together the sort of the functional and the emotional, and it can actually change behavior as a result.
That's brilliant. So basically, when you sort of, to summarize with things that you've sort of done differently, you've really got that strong empathy, that strong strong insight that you're building from. You're obviously staying close to the data, as you identified, it's female to female. And actually really playing into almost a new space, aren't you? The just because, the new occasion. So actually, it's a really nice sort of combination of what we talk about, sort of really understanding the consumer, understanding what your brand's about, but also looking for that new opportunity, that new sort of blind spot that others may not have identified. So no, that's a really lovely sort of story. Tell me a bit more, though, about the changing behaviour. You talked about the changing behaviour at the end. Is there more in there?
Well, I suppose, you know, it's what I'm trying to get at is that it's not just big occasions. And I think that's an important way that we will continue to scale our business also, is by offering people products and services, but also, you know, the nudging them with our communications and our creative to think about occasions outside of just those big ones like birthdays and Mother's Day and Valentine's Day. And so, you know, there's another product which has similarly changed behavior, I think, which is our tiny trees, which are, if you haven't seen them, everybody falls in love with them when they do. They are these tiny little Christmas trees that fit in a letterbox packaging, but they're beautifully, come with lots of beautiful decorations. And again, that is sort of a different Christmas gift. It's not a Christmas gift that's going to end up under the tree. So, you know, we're not competing with everybody else who's trying to get that part of share of wallet. These actually tend to be sent at the very start of December, so more like an advent calendar, sort of completely reimagined, if you can think of it that way. And so people are sending these to maybe they've got people who they are going to see at Christmas, but they're getting excited for that, or maybe they're not going to see them, or maybe there are grandchildren or grandparents who might not decorate their home, but this is the perfect size thing. So again, you can see that there's the product has enabled a different gifting moment and a different behavior. And we absolutely love to see people's pictures of where they end up, because they really do end up in all kinds of places.
That's brilliant. I'm glad I scratched underneath that one to find out a little bit more. These trees sound absolutely fascinating. That's Christmas sorted for me. But in terms of this idea of reinforcing this idea of looking for that new opportunity, that new moment, which is so important, I think, for sort of startups when they're thinking about what they're going after. But tell me a bit more. You know, you talked about coming from L'Oreal, you're a digital first sort of brand. What have you learned about this type of business?
Yeah, look, I think the first thing is agility. We have a lot of data, so we can continually optimize the customer experience. And whether that is down to, we have something which we call QualBot, which is analyzing all of the customer feedback that we get in so that we can spot patterns in product quality very, very quickly. So, you know, it might be that there's a problem with a particular stem in a particular bouquet, and we can know about that almost in real time so that we can fix it quickly. But also we can test and learn very quickly with new things that we launch. So last autumn we launched a product called our Little Blooms, which is a sort of under £20 posy, in response to the cost of living pressures that everybody's having. And we were able to get that live within about 6 to 8 weeks. And we could learn very, very quickly whether we got the price point right, whether the, you know, stems were right. And we have actually made some changes since launching that, but it's, you know, very easy to do that. So that agility is really refreshing. You know, you're not going through hugely long innovation cycles or ranging cycles with, you know, big retailers. And then I suppose we're very close to the end customer, and we're not distracted by having a retailer in the middle as our customer. So we can really quickly turn around customer insight research on a large and a small scale. And we have a sort of constant dialogue with our customers through our customer delight team and through the sort of NPS feedback that they're giving us.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
And I think there's probably something a bit more existential, which is we've got the confidence of being a challenger brand. So, you know, when we came into this market, we were doing things completely differently. And I suppose, therefore, a little bit less likely to get sort of distracted by the competition, or more confident in sort of focusing on what we do well for our customers and what appeals to them. And so we, you know, we know how we're different from competitors, and of course we keep an eye on them, but I think we're really focused on, you know, what we do well, and we can continue to sort of double down on that. I suppose the only thing I would say is, coming from a sort of more traditional marketing background is when I first landed in Bloom and Wild, I noticed that you can get, D2C can get a bit stuck in the functional. And so, you know, because you're doing presentations to VCs and you're trying to explain to them, you know, our supply chain is shorter and our app is better and all of that stuff. So I think it was important for me to just make sure that we still remembered, well, why is that emotionally resonant for customers? And that was a really important part of developing our Care Wildly brand platform that we did in 2020, which gives us that basis now to innovate and grow well beyond where we started.
Brilliant. So much to try and unpack there. So that was excellent, Charlotte. And what I really liked about it is it's my favourite phrase. We use it a lot in the innovation podcast that we do, is certainly that idea of testing and learning. And yeah, you really do have the advantage of being able to do that. But I want to ask you a couple of follow-ups on that, if that's okay. The confidence thing, we often say that our larger brands, you know, they just have to have the confidence to take that risk. But you say that you feel a little bit more confident. Can you say, first of all, a little bit more about that?
Well, I suppose it's, in a way, it's easier for us to fail than if you're, you know, trying to secure a listing with Tesco and it takes you months and lots of investment, because, you know, therefore we can go quickly and fail quickly as well if then that does happen, of course. But I think there's also just a culture of trying new things. So if I think about our thoughtful marketing movement, for example, so we started this idea of enabling people to opt out of marketing around occasions that are sensitive for them. And it started with Mother's Day. Now, that came from, you know, somebody in our customer delight team saying, I've heard a few customers asking if we can just not send them the emails about Mother's Day. And then our retention and product teams thought, okay, actually, hang on, maybe we can do something bigger with this, then we can actually scale it. So there's also just a confidence in individuals to say, that's a strong idea, and we think we can do something meaningful with it. And I think that's a cultural ownership and autonomy piece, which you get really strongly in a smaller business, which can lead to these quite big innovations.
And I think often you're right, it stems from having that culture to experiment and learn, and that confidence. So no, that's a good piece of advice about really thinking about the culture that you're building from when you're innovating. The other one I wanted to follow up on is, you talked about having a strong platform to innovate from. That's really important to me. When we talk to lots of people who sort of innovate well, they often talk about that. But sometimes there's a challenge of, I've got this platform, how do I then translate that into an innovation? Are you able to say a little bit more about that, please?
Yeah, so I think what we're looking at the moment, in fact, is how we expand outside of just flower and plant gifting into broader gifting. And so there's clearly a risk as you stretch the brand in that way that you lose some of the original DNA. So we've been very, very careful to try and unpick what that is before going anywhere. So we've spoken to our customers at length about, well, what is it about shopping with Bloom and Wild that they value, and which of those elements are very translatable. So we know, for example, that they trust our quality. They trust us to curate a range, so they don't actually need to see hundreds and hundreds of products. They think, okay, if it's on Bloom and Wild, we know that you've done the hard work for us. One of our strongest brand attributes is unique design, or a unique range rather. So we know that people are expecting something a little bit different, and that helps us as we go into gifting and curate other gifting brands. Helps us think about how we select them. And, you know, fundamentally, we're trying to help people express they care, right? So that's, you've really got to think about, therefore, attention to detail and things like our packaging and unboxing experience, which we put a lot of thought into on flowers. We've really tried to translate that across into other categories, like whether that might be candles or cakes or something like that, so that, of course, it's not exactly the same, but you get the same sort of experience no matter what you're buying from us. So I think it's about really pinpointing, why do people come to you today, and how can you translate that into your new revenue streams?
You know, that's fascinating, because actually this is really, really valuable advice when we always talk about sort of really being sure what your meaningful difference is about your brand if you're going to stretch it, and to stretch it in the way that's right for your brand. So super, super valuable advice to those listening. Now tell me, sort of, you know, let's turn the other side of this. You've got some advantages, agility is on your side, but what are some of the other challenges that you've really faced working in that sort of more D2C environment?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I wasn't there at the very beginning. I've been around for almost 4 years now, but I think I often talk to Aaron, our co-founder, about some of the early days, and there are some great stories. I mean, people might not know, but actually Bloomin' Wild started as a subscription product, so as a flower subscription. But what we found is that people were buying a subscription and then cancelling it because actually all they wanted to do was send one bunch of flowers. So very early on, we realized that you really need to watch what your customers actually want and respond to it. And then there's various, you know, funny moments whereby we, you know, created boxes which didn't have any holes for the flowers to breathe, and that was a disaster, or we got our forecasting wrong, and Aaron's flat ended up full of Valentine's roses. So there are some of those early kind of fails. But then I think more recently, I think in COVID, I mentioned that, you know, we were very, very fortunate to scale during that time. But that was also extremely challenging to scale at record speed. And it was like, for us, it was like doing Mother's Day every day for a year. And during that time, I was also doing a rebrand and developing a brand platform with our agency partners over Zoom. So you can imagine how unideal that was. And now I think the challenge is we're in a very different environment post-COVID. All brands are facing these tough choices. And so for us, that's really about focusing on, well, how can we deliver our commercial goal of profitability, which is super important in an environment like this one, especially when you're in, you know, a scale up which has been previously reliant on lots of VC funding, for example, and you're moving into a different phase of the business where we wanted to be self-sufficient. But how can you do that whilst, you know, not compromising on our really high standards of customer experience? So we pride ourselves on having very high NPS. I mentioned that the industry average is around 0, ours hovers around 80. So we want to make sure that we don't compromise on that, because that's really core to what we offer to our customers.
So yeah, not all plain sailing, but certainly some pivots and some tough choices along the way. Let's think about the future. What are you excited about for the future of Bloomin' Wild? It's such a great company. I'd love to know what you're excited about.
Yeah, well, I'm super excited about scaling outside of just flowers and plants and building a true gifting destination, because I don't know about you, but I find it really hard when it's, you know, a good friend's birthday or something to find something easily online that I can really send directly to them. Because let's face it, we're, you know, everyone is all over the place. We're separated by geography and time and families and all kinds of things. So I think if we can build an experience that people can just trust every single time, that it's going to be spot on and that there's a big enough variety that they can come back to us again and again for a different variety of occasions and recipients, and do that with different gifts, I think that will be really, really important. So, you know, about 80% of our orders are from repeaters. And so for us, trying to think about how we can show up for them better, be even more useful to them, and just serve them more often is a really exciting challenge. And, you know, we'll obviously, as I said, root that in kind of the customer insight that we have and understanding people's missions and what's important to them, and taking forward the elements of the brand that we, you know, we know are strong, and translating that. So it's a really exciting piece, and my team are obviously very kind of much at the heart of that. And so I'm super excited to see the evolution over the next year or two, because I think we'll be in quite a different place in a few years' time.
Amazing. And I certainly do have those challenges, which is actually, I'm an early adopter. Quite early on, I gifted some flowers to a friend of mine. So yeah, definitely a problem I share, and actually sounds like an exciting future. And you're right, you really need to sort of start shaping that category, shaping the future of that sort of gifting destination, as you called it. What advice would you give other innovators from companies big or small on what they should do to enable them to have the same successes that you've had.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we've touched on it already, but know what your existing brand or product strengths are. And this sounds very obvious, but make sure that that's what customers understand them to be, not just your internal view, because I've had some interesting conversations, you know, in the past where there's a very strong internal view, but it's not really backed up by what customers see. And then think about how you can translate that into new products and categories, what carries over and what doesn't. And sometimes that's fine. You know, that might be a problem that it doesn't carry over, but actually sometimes that's okay. And think about, should the ability for that to carry over impact the kind of innovation that you do? And the best test I have for that is, you know, is this going to make sense to our customers? So, you know, we're all immersed in our brands all day, every day. And I frequently remind my team that actually most people don't care about us. They don't think about us very often. And so you just need something which, you know, is going to make sense. That doesn't mean it can't be quite different, but there's got to be some connectivity there. And then the final thing I would say is, you know, look for other areas of innovation outside of product innovation. So I mentioned thoughtful marketing and the opt-outs that we pioneered, but also one of our big sort of innovation areas is around sustainability and how we can do things differently in the industry and really lead change in the industry. So we're doing things like setting carbon budgets for our bouquets, which allows us to track and then reduce the emission by bouquet year on year. So there are always more areas than just your product or your service that you can innovate on.
Fascinating. Really, really great advice. And actually, when you talk to the top, you know, no one, you might not think you know what your brand is about, but really sort of, yeah, check in with the customer. I think that one's really important. And also, I think it's refreshing to hear a brand that's sort of quite driven by an innovation from the outset and finding that new opportunity really is now doing very strong brand innovation. Because sometimes that, you know, I've done my first innovation and my launch, now what? And I think building from that strong brand understanding is vital advice you've given throughout this podcast. So I think others have a lot to learn from that. So thank you so much, Charlotte, for your time today, and lovely to speak to you.
Thank you, Nikki. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Future Proof from Kantar and Side Business School. For all episodes and more information, visit kantar.com or oxfordfutureofmarketing.com. If you enjoyed this, please leave a rating and a review and subscribe on your favourite podcast app so you never miss an episode.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.